Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. 20 years ago today, Philly's heart's broken.
Thought we didn't. Now the 2-2. Well hit, down the left field line. Way back.
Last game CBS aired of Major League Baseball. Sean McDonough with the call, who, by the way, for years was the Red Sox TV announcer.
That still hurts to see that.
Oh, I'm sure it does.
After 20 years.
You guys never see that. No, I mean, I'm serious. What? I'm serious. Phillies fans, you hardly ever see it, okay? Imagine sitting in my shoes. Ball down the line, it's through Buckner's legs. I mean,
you're right. The Buckner boot does beat it. You're right.
And over and guess what? Even though the Red Sox have won two World Series, you're going to see the damn thing again tonight.
Which is worse, Buckner or Dent?
Neither one now.
All right. Which was worse?
Neither one now because they've won twice since. I mean, that's...
I know, but growing up a Boston fan, which was worse?
Well, the difference between the Buckner play and the Dent play is as follows. The Dent play, I sat in my apartment at Penn State. I was a junior here at University Park at the time, and I watched every pitch of that game. I mean, every single pitch I watched of that game. All right? All the way through. I mean... Even after Dent hit the home run, I thought the Red Sox could win. Lou Piniella made a phenomenal play in the sun where he couldn't see the ball and reached out and stabbed a line drive from Jim Rice. The Buckner play was different for me because that was the same day Penn State was in 86. I'm the third announcer for Penn State. And Penn State went to Alabama that day. Penn State was ranked fifth and Alabama was ranked second, both undefeated. Both 7-0. And Penn State kicked the living daylights out of Alabama. In Tuscaloosa, only the 18th time they'd ever lost in Tuscaloosa. It was 23-3. So we're flying back, and Kevin, I never saw the game. Except for that half inning. I got back and I had to bring equipment back to the radio station I was working at the time. And in the newsroom of the radio station, I watched the last out of the top of the 10th where the Red Sox had just scored. I didn't even see them score the runs. Last out of the top of the 10th, and then I watched all the bottom of the 10th, and I just stood there and watched it. So there was no impact on me about the play at the moment at all. Because I flew back, and at this time, University Park Airport didn't take bigger planes. So we had to fly into Harrisburg and bus up. So it flew back into Harrisburg and bussed up from there. I missed the entire game except for that half inning. Well, I'm just saying. So, I mean, and Penn State was in the running for a national championship. I'm now part of a network. I mean, that meant more.
Yeah, your focus was different.
Yeah, being part of that than seeing the Red Sox win a World Series or whatever. So it was a completely different set of circumstances. 2004, as a fan, you're going to say, when did you stop being a fan?
I was going to say, when was that again?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, because they'd never won in my lifetime, and the way things had gone, you didn't think, the way they came back, won the whole thing. And I went to game two. I went to game two. I was five rows off the field at the pesky pole in right field. I mean, you know, that was the Schilling second Bloody Sock game. They beat the Cardinals that night 6-2. So it was a completely different thing. And when they won it as a fan in 2007, they won. I was like, oh, yeah, that's great.
Well, I'm not going to play that out of respect.
Well, I don't care if you play. Look, I've got the whole thing memorized. I mean, what does it matter? I mean, you can play that anytime you want. I really don't care.
It was a great. Was it Vin Scully was on the call, wasn't it?
Right, Vin Scully was on the call. I mean, you know, but I feel like, you know, at this stage of my life, I've got my own calls now.
I think the reason 93 hurts is I was down. I was actually on my honeymoon in Orlando with a bunch of Atlanta Braves fans during the NLCS. And I mean a bunch of Atlanta Braves fans. So I'm wearing every Philly shirt I have. And to watch them win it was the best. With all those Atlanta fans going, ugh. It was actually, I enjoyed that. That was a great moment for me. And then to come back home and watch Mitch Williams shake off a pitch and throw the gopher ball. And I don't blame Mitch Williams, okay? Everybody comes out, and Mitch Williams got a bad rap for that whole thing. He threw a decent pitch. I really believe he threw a decent pitch, and Carter just destroyed it. And he got a bad rap for that. And it was a question of, do you really bring Mitch Williams in that situation? I remember all the talk shows talking about that. Listen, he got you there. You dance with the one who brung you. I have no problem with Mitch Williams in that situation. He just, I don't know what pitch he shook off, but he shook off a pitch, and the next one was found pretty much at the Canada-United States line.
Look, Mariano Rivera is the greatest relief pitcher ever.
Right? No question.
Okay. In 2004, in the regular season, the day that Veritek got into it with Rodriguez, you know what everyone forgets about that game?
What?
Is Bill Miller won the game with a home run off Mariano Rivera. A walk-off. They go to the playoff game, game four. Here's Mariano Rivera closing out game four, and he walks Kevin Millar, Robert Steele second, and Bill Miller hits one up the middle, and they beat him. It's the greatest relief pitcher ever. Trying to close out a four-game sweep. Didn't do it. It opened the door to history. My point being, all of them are beaten at one point or another. Mariano Rivera was beaten at a moment where he was trying to close out the entire series. Mitch Williams was trying to keep the series alive. Okay? Mitch Williams was not closing out the series. He did not blow the World Series where the Phillies had the World Series in their hand. No. He was trying to keep the World Series alive. If they somehow survive that, they go to Game 7.
Which, by the way, with Ricky Henderson on first base, not necessarily the slowest guy in Major League Baseball.
No. So it's a different set of circumstances. You end up with the greatest relief pitcher ever, and it's going to take a lot for anybody to be in his category. And even he, in that moment, was beaten by somebody.
But it's just a shame for Mitch Williams, who never, I mean, really was anything after that. It took decades before he could show his face back in Philadelphia again, and then was on the Philadelphia broadcast for a while, which I thought was great, and now I think he's with Major League Baseball, MLB Network
now. He is. He's very good on MLB Network.
And he is. He is. He's very candid, and that's what I always liked about him.
In 2008, after the Red Sox won the 2007 World Series, they opened the season at home, 2008, which they give out the rings. And I don't know the man. I think it's Dick Bresciani is his name. He's the one in charge of all of the pomp and circumstance that takes place at Fenway Park. They invited Bill Buckner back to throw out the first pitch for the 2008 season. He walks out of the scoreboard in left field to a 10-minute standing ovation.
That wouldn't have happened in Philadelphia. It took a good 15 years.
Now, you ask me all the time, when did I stop, quote, being a fan?
Right.
Right. I love sports. I think people can tell by listening to how I've done this show for 2 years. I'm not an attacked, negative sports talk host. It's my personal nature. I'm just not that way. I will be critical of certain things along the way that deserve criticism, or I'll tell you what I think needs to be better, in my personal opinion. I might not be right, but it's my personal opinion. And I think taking a guy and publicly flogging a guy because he threw a pitch that the other guy hit out, or that the ball went through his legs after he drove in 102 runs for you in the regular season, by the way.
And keep in mind, the poor guy had a bone spur. Wasn't it a bone spur on his heel?
Well, it's more than that. John McNamara mismanaged the moment. And he really is the guy that I look at, because every postseason game in 1986 that the Red Sox won, Dave Stapleton was the first baseman in the clinching inning. Every time. He was the first baseman. And he decided that they scored a couple runs, and he decided to be sentimental and let Buckner be on the field for the end, which was, of course, the wrong thing to do. You play the way you need to play to win. Should have put Dave Stapleton in. He should have been the guy that was at that spot. So,
what would be the greatest moment, in your opinion, World Series history?
Greatest moment, World Series? I mean, I didn't witness it live, but Bill Mazeroski's home run would.
I would agree with that as well.
I mean, it's Game 7 walk off in a tie game.
Yeah, you know, Kirby Puckett. Had a nice little that extended the series,
right? But a game 7 walk off in a tie game, yeah. you don't top that moment. I mean, Carlton Fisk hit one, you know, but it extended the series to 7. Kirby Puckett extended the series to 7. I've been in the Metrodome. I was on the field with the football players, and a couple of them walked away. What's the white seat over here? Because it would be in the corner of the end zone. And I explained to them that's where the Kirby Puckett home run landed off of Charlie Liebrandt. So I've talked about it when I've been there.
I remember the fist in the air, the homer hankies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole thing. But it extended the series. Mazeroski ended the series.
Yeah, there's no question that was the biggest. But by the way...
The next one would be Don Larson's perfect game.
Oh, no. Yeah, I would agree with that, too. Just a different way to... Mm-hmm. Have a big play. Oh, by the way, game time temperature is going to barely be in the 40s tonight.
Yeah.
Which puts it as the coldest game in Boston history for a baseball start. Right. And I believe the third coldest World Series game.
Right.
Because I think Cleveland has one, and Philadelphia's wasn't, I don't think, is as cold as tonight's will be. So guess what that means?
Lots of Narragansett and Budweiser. All right, so
I was going to go with ear flap hats, but yeah.
No, you've got to, you know, see, I grew up in New England. You've got to think the way New Englanders do.
Okay, and that wouldn't be ear flap hats like in Philly?
Budweiser and Gansett. All right, so.
A different way to stay warm, I see.
You might as well jet fuel the crowd. I mean,
I don't see that happening for the guys playing the game, though.
But do you know what's interesting, though, Kev, in all seriousness? When you are at big games, big events, concessions don't do well.
Well, no, because nobody wants to leave their seats.
Exactly. You don't, you know... I'll go to regular season games, people up, down, up, down, up, down. My son and I will go to games up at Fenway. You know, we'll get up, get something, you come back down, sit down. That World Series game that I went to, the game 2 with Schilling, nobody moved. Nobody. Because the game meant everything.
Now everybody's going to be frozen in place.
Well, you can't. I mean, we've had good weather too. I mean, it's just it's just the way it's played out.
But,
I mean,
but see, this goes back to the conversation you and I have a lot.
Well,
I mean,
they
here
should
we
shorten
are.
The season.
This is the 20th anniversary of the end of a World Series, and it's just starting tonight.
Yeah, I know, but that's because of the divisional series. It wasn't a divisional series 20 years
ago. That's a good point. That's a very good point.
I mean, that's the reason why it's extended is because of the wild card and the divisional series.
You should just there should be no baseball games played with ear flaps. I mean, you're looking
at
rain, temperatures falling through the 40s, and a wind out of the west-northwest at 7 to 14 miles an hour, which will probably make it feel like it's in the upper 20s.
Means any ball to the left is going to be a problem. Fenway Park has changed over the years. There have been some dynamics that have changed. You saw, for example, the left fielder for Tampa Bay. He struggled his brains out on the wall. I mean, the Red Sox won that series in the first two games because he couldn't play the wall. Okay? And that wall is so much easier to play now than it was 30 years ago.
Why is it easier to play?
Oh, my God. Let's chalk this up to a little history lesson here. When Yastrzemski is the greatest left fielder to have played that wall at Fenway. Ted Williams might be next, then maybe Jim Rice. The wall back in Yastrzemski's day was on the top tin and on the bottom concrete. So if it hit the concrete, which would be about 15 feet high, if it hit the concrete, it would fly off there and carom. If it hit the scoreboard, who knows what direction it would go in. If it hit the tin, it died, came straight down. Now the wall is all vinyl. It's the same bounce off when it hits the green part of the wall. It's the same bounce every time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay? It's the same bounce every time. It's funny when you stand at the bottom and look up at it, which I've done a few times because I've been on the field a few times. Right? All the dents in it. It's kind of a ride. And the other part that's changed in Fenway Park is when they built the 600 Club and then put the press box above it, that cut down on the wind blowing the left field and being a difference. That's why Fenway gives up an average amount of home runs now as opposed to an above average number. If you're going to... I don't think there's a talk show host in Pennsylvania, I will say this with pride, that knows more about this park than I do.
I would feel very, very confident in saying that. Yes.
Okay? You know, I may not know about everybody else's park. This, I went to this baby when they celebrated the 100th year of Fenway last year. The first game I went to was in year 51. I
just
did.
Sounds funny.
I know. I was 5 years old. In 1963, the first time I went to Fenway Park. And Mickey Mantle, I mean, my dad's favorite team was the Yankees, which is my brother's favorite team. My brother hates the Red Sox. I saw my brother Monday. He says, I can't root for them. I hate the Reds. I hope the Cardinals sweep them. Right. Then I was telling about how, you know, I said, there's a couple guys. I said, because we had Matt Adams of the Cardinals on the show last year, remember?
Yes.
And he's Phillipsburg Osceola High School. And, of course, I know Alan Craig because he played here in State College. He goes, wow, that's great, neat. He says, anybody you know in the Red Sox? Well, I know Brock Holt because he played in State College. And he says, I can't stand him. Well, my father, he got that love of the Yankees from my father. My father loved Mickey Mantle. Mantle was his, I mean, that was his guy. So my grandfather, who lived 10 to 15 miles. Lexington, for those who love history, Lexington is where the first battle of the Revolutionary War
took
place.
Lexington Concord, yeah.
Yeah. Now, well, my godmother lives four houses off the Lexington Green. My grandfather lived about a mile and a half from the Lexington Green. My mother's a graduate of Lexington High School. So we'd go up there, boom, we'd get tickets, we'd go in. I mean, I went all the time. First time I went, Mantle and Maris hit home runs. Mantle from the right-hand side cleared the screen because they didn't have the monster seats back then. Cleared the screen. I never saw my father jump so high. But that was the first time I went. I was 5 years old. First time I went.
I have the three coldest games in World Series history. I was trying to figure out where the Phillies game in 08 fell. The first is Cleveland and Miami, where the first two games of the series were in Miami with temperatures in the 70s. And then they went back to Cleveland for a game-time first pitch of 38 degrees and a wind chill of 18 with snow flurries and ice patches on the infield. 1979 World Series Game 1, October 10th, 79 in Baltimore. Pirates and the Orioles, first pitch was 43 degrees. The problem is it was a steady, chilly rain that fell throughout the game. Players got numb, with their hands were going numb, they were complaining about, and the ball was so slippery they couldn't get a grip. In fact, there were six errors in that game, three by each team. And then third is the 08 Game 5. The game began on the 27th at 50 degrees in rain, and then by the bottom of the sixth inning and Lake Citizens Bank at second base, they called the game, and it delayed until the 28th with temperatures, again, rather chilly, of 44 degrees and a gusty wind.
Well, I mean, I maintain the entire... They won't do this. I mean, they're not going to cut back the season.
No, they're not. But they need to consider doing something, because these games in this kind of weather in the north is just not the way baseball's supposed to be played.
I don't know how warm it's going to be in St. Louis. Not, you know, it's not exactly the banana...
it's not. No,
St. Louis isn't exactly the banana belt. All right, news coming up in the bottom of the hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors is the home of the Chateau. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street at Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15. Hummel's Wharf, 14s run the lots. Spectacular, great time to buy with a great sales staff that cares about your needs and your budget. Game one of the World Series is tonight. Kevin's still lamenting over a loss in 93.
No, it brought back some memories.
Oh, for goodness sakes. In 2008, they won. You should be over it.
Well, that helped a lot. I mean, an awful lot. I did often use the saying in 1994 when the strike ended the World Series that the Phillies were still National League champs.
They won in 2008. You should be over it.
I didn't say it. I'm just saying brought back a lot of memories.
You
Not
should
good
be
ones.
Over Oh, you should be over it. You're so bitter.
Wasn't good memories.
I talked to him about the Super Bowl. He goes, yeah, we lost to the Packers.
No, it's the Cowboys one that I can't stand.
I knew it. Neil O'Donnell. I knew it. I knew it.
He's not even in that pass route, Neil. Where are you throwing the ball?
I mean, all the Super Bowls they've won, and you think about the losses.
There was no one there. No one.
Antoine Randall, the Hines Ward.
Yeah, the ball that was underthrown, and Hines Ward actually made a great catch.
Roethlisberger to Santonio Holmes. Come on.
Willie Parker with one of the longest runs from scrimmage.
Just lamenting about the losses.
We went out to Steeler training camp, and they had a you make the call, and it was Willie Parker's run in the Super Bowl. That was fun. I enjoyed doing that.
You went out to what?
We went out to training camp the next year.
Yeah.
And they had a you make the call booth where they gave you the play and you called it, and it was Willie Parker's run to start the second half over Seattle, which at that point I think was the longest run from scrimmage in a Super Bowl.
Fabulous.
That was fun. Guy said, hey, you should do that. You should do that for a living. I said, that's a good idea.
Oh, you announced the play.
Yes, 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 yes.
Oh, I see.
Yes. They gave you the headset and you announced the play.
Wow.
It's the only opportunity I'll ever have to call a Steeler game.
Wow.
So I took advantage of that one play.
I guess it must have been fun.
So now I can say that I've called a Super Bowl. Kind of.
Sure. That makes you feel better.
They have the museum down in Washington, D.C.
Yes, I know. John Molesky is a guy I went to college with, and he's the host of the museum.
I haven't been to the new one. I was to the old one in Virginia, and they had a You Make the Call booth there as well. And that one, I think, was...
Carter shaking hands with Begin.
No.
Unbelievable moment.
It was the record-setting game with Cal Ripken.
Oh, I see.
Didn't he hit a... And he, if I remember right, he hit a home run in that game, and that's what I had to call.
He did homer, yes. Yeah, I thought New Zealand would be like, hey. Begin, Sadat, and Carter. Hey. Big moment. Wow. Ohio State, Penn State. Here's Ohio State's dilemma. Ohio State is fourth right now in the BCS. Ahead of them, Alabama, Florida State, and Oregon in that order. Alabama still has LSU, Auburn on there, and the possibility of the SEC championship game, which could be South Carolina. Florida State just had Clemson. And that, you notice how they vaulted past everybody to get to second. They were fifth at one point. Now, you look at, for example, Florida State has NC State this week. All right, you know, they're the prohibitive favorite there. But Florida State still has Miami coming up, and then they have Florida at the end. They also have Idaho. That should be interesting. But they have Florida and Miami still on the schedule. Oregon still has UCLA this weekend and Stanford. For Ohio State, they got Penn State and Michigan. That's it. Okay? They either need an Alabama to lose to an LSU or lose to an Auburn, stumble somewhere, or Miami to beat Florida State or Stanford to beat Oregon. They're going to need help to get there. They don't have a game on their schedule that's going to vault them past any one of the two teams in front of them, which would be Oregon or Florida State. They don't have a game that vaults them past these guys like Florida State did in beating Clemson. That's a problem.
Well, and I think they have a couple of games that, are going to be interesting matchups for them, too.
With Florida State?
No, Ohio State, looking at their schedule. Well,
they have Penn State, Michigan. That's it. That's what they have.
Well, I don't know. Indiana can put some points on the board.
Kevin, they bring nothing to the table that vaults you past.
No. I'm saying I think it's games that can ruin an undefeated season. That's what I meant.
That's irrelevant. Okay, that's irrelevant. Okay, you need to find a way to vault past somebody to get to the two spot. Okay, they lose a game, any game, they're out of it.
Right.
They don't have a game that vaults them. Oregon can vault Florida State potentially by beating Stanford and UCLA in back-to-back weeks. There's enough juice in those wins that vault you. Florida State still has Miami. They've got Florida. Ohio State has Penn State this week. Really important game. And you got Michigan. That's it. Yeah, Indiana can put up points. That doesn't help you. Purdue, really?
No, I just meant that that's a game that I think any one of those three games is a game that could cost them just the undefeated record alone, not to mention where they stand in the BCS.
Well, I mean, costing them the undefeated season is one thing, but that is irrelevant to the conversation. because in order to get there, they got to win all those games. But right. But right now they're in a position where if they win all the games, they don't get into the title game. That's my point. They're in a position now where if they win every game, even Penn State and Michigan, they don't get to the title game if everybody else wins. They can't control their own destiny. The bottom line is they need help. They need to win all of their games, but they need Stanford to beat Oregon or UCLA to beat Oregon, and they need either Miami or Florida to beat Florida State. Ohio State has nothing there that vaults them past anybody where they can control their own destiny. Florida State just had that. They played Clemson. Well, they controlled their own destiny because they won so impressively, they jumped everybody. Alabama controls its own destiny.
They still have LSU and Auburn.
Right, but they control their own destiny. Yeah. They know if they win all their games and they're undefeated, they're in. Ohio State, if they win all their games, they might be still out. Because they don't have a game on their schedule that vaults them over anybody else. They don't have that signature game, that must-see game that everybody wants to see. And, wow, did you see that? Look how they played. Boom, move them.
Well,
they don't have that.
Missouri's got two games that I think could get them some attention. And that's South Carolina and
Texas
A&M.
Missouri's out of it, okay? It's four teams.
You don't think Missouri could leapfrog?
What, the second?
No, at least leapfrog over Ohio State yet. I mean, no matter what happens with Ohio State.
Yeah, but you gotta get to two in this thing.
Right. No, I know. I'm looking at a top four, but what I was saying is let's say for the sake of argument, Ohio State for some reason does move up because everything falls into place. Missouri could still leapfrog them to the two slot if they win out.
They can, but Missouri's playing with a backup quarterback now. They will. That now becomes danger for them. That's a big issue.
But that's another and that's another point that Ohio State just doesn't control their own destiny. You're right.
They just don't control their own destiny. You know, they don't have. I mean, Alabama could be, say that it were reversed, and Alabama's in the four spot. They've got LSU that they can defeat, and Auburn they can defeat, that allows them to go bang, bang up the ladder, play the SEC championship game,
right.
win that against a South Carolina or somebody, and they'd be in. Ohio State might be in a position where, they've got Penn State this week. They don't have another tough game till Michigan. Then they may have a rematch with Michigan. Another thing you want to avoid. A rematch in back-to-back games. That's why putting Michigan... I maintain from day one Michigan and Ohio State should be in the same division. They tried to set this thing up so Ohio State would play Michigan in the Big Ten championship game. That was going to be like the moment. That's how it was set up. You know how many times they played each other in the Big Ten championship game?
No, how many?
Zero. Okay. It's never.
That
never
was going to be my guess, but
neither one of them's ever made it to the Big Ten championship game.
Does Michigan State or Nebraska have enough to win the Legends?
Michigan State has enough defense, and Nebraska has enough offense.
I don't see Ohio State going undefeated. I just think they have too many stumbling blocks on the way just to go undefeated, period. And they did not look overly impressive against Iowa for the majority of that game.
Right. They've got five games left. Three of them, they are the absolute prohibitive favorite.
Okay? I would agree.
Okay, Penn State and Michigan are the two stumbling blocks.
And if this were next year, just for fun, I still don't think their strength of schedule gives them enough room to jump in to be even a four, because I think they have a chance of losing that opportunity too because of San Diego State and Florida A&M and Buffalo.
And Cal's not very good.
Well, and
I mean, Cal's not very good. They got Purdue, Illinois, Indiana. Are you kidding me? I mean, Penn State and Michigan, this is why the game for Ohio State, the game for Penn State's huge because it's prime time. They're ranked fourth. This is great. Great opportunity. A lot of motivation. The whole deal. For Ohio State, they know they need this because they have nothing until they get to Michigan. There's nothing to do except show up, ring up a score, and go home, and then just twist in the wind to see if somebody loses.
Not to mention the fact that that's at Michigan as well.
Kevin.
Yes?
You know how many times that in a row they've...
I don't care. It's still.
I mean, whether they won 9 of the last 10 games? Ohio State, Michigan?
I believe in the rivalry theory.
Well, it is a rivalry.
It doesn't matter what the records are. It doesn't matter what the standings are, the statistics. It's a rivalry.
To a point. It's a huge rivalry game and blah, 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 blah. Okay? But the talent must be comparable. All right? The talent must be comparable. That's where it has to be. All right? And when you look at this series... Eight of the last 9 have been won by Ohio State. I mean, 8 of the last 9. Now, Brady Hoke is undefeated in Ann Arbor. He's never lost a game as the head coach. But you're looking at 8 of the last 9 won by Ohio State. And 10 of the last 12 won by Ohio State. And they have more talent. Ohio State, I've looked at the tapes. Ohio State has more talent than Michigan does. Just, I know you believe in the rivalry theory. I'm a big believer in talent. All right. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout.
Like a 2011 Ford Explorer Limited, like new, low miles, and Ford certified pre-owned, just $34,995. Clean Carfax and fully serviced 2005 Chevrolet Colorado 11,487. This 2011 Ford F-150 XLT is one tough truck, but at a friendly price, $24,494. 2011 Dodge Nitro Heat. He'll be the second owner, just $17,995. And a gas-sipping 2012 Ford Focus with lots of remaining warranty, $12,495. Call 570-286-7746.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout.
See the full inventory and schedule a test drive at sunburymotors.com.
At the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
You know, over the years, you've looked at the Ohio State-Michigan series.
Yes.
You call it the game. Most of those games, I mean, back in the Woody and Bose days, were just awful. I mean, you watch them, you're like, oh, somebody moved the ball. I mean, you wonder why the two of them got whacked left and right in bowl games. Holy moly. They were totally unprepared to play in bowl games. I mean, really. I mean, when the Big Ten was so soft back then. Two of them like would go through the first 10 games, blah, 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 then finally play a titanic matchup between the two. One or the other would win, then the other one would go and get whacked in a bowl game. Because they weren't ready. They weren't prepared. Conference is different now. I mean, when Penn State entered in 1993, a lot of people have elevated their game. I mean, look at now the Big Ten. There have been, of the 12 schools 8 have won conference championships, and another's been in the championship game, Nebraska. I mean, the only three that have never won, have not won a Big Ten championship, or have been in the title game, or division title. Okay? And that would be, and actually, it's Indiana, Purdue. I'm sorry, my apologies. Only Indiana and Minnesota are the only two. Everybody else has either won a division or the conference title because Michigan State's been in the title game. That's how balanced the Big Ten has been the last 20 years. 8 different teams have won championships. 2 others have made it to the title game. Only 2 have been on the outside looking in. That's better than having the Big 2 and the Little 8.